Everyone's asleep.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to yet another exciting episode of the Vinnie Eastwood Show. This is a dark occulted mysticism special where we have co-host Freighter X and a very special guest who's a specialist in the occult world on with us for a few cackles at the various dark occulted mysticism wails and wiles of the New World Order and scumbaggery agenda and whatnot. And our guest today is James Wright, formerly of the Supreme Council in Dallas. James, welcome to the program.
Oh, thank you, Vinny.
Greetings, James.
Hello, Frater.
Now, where do we go from here? Because we're all very familiar with the topics, and we're all very familiar with each other. Is there anything new on the horizon? Because I got nothing.
Well, I've got something new.
Yes, you do.
I've got a couple of things. So you're talking about the document that I sent you today, James?
Yeah, I read the pages you said, and that was always amazing. You know, fun.
Well, I've got those quotes right here. I've written down a few of the quotes from the pages of a document that I sent to James today, which is basically the playbook, really, of the Illuminati in many cases, or at least the playbook of the social engineers or global power elite of this country, you know, and probably of England and any other Western nation out there, you know. But it's a document that was written in 1973. It's the United States Government Commission report from SRI International entitled Changing Images of Man, which is edited by Willis W. Harmon and O.K. Markley, which included It's this idea that they put forth in 1973 that there was a new values and a spiritual revolution occurring in America, an ecological awareness and a self-realization movement, and that it was becoming virtually unstoppable based on this commission report. And this would bring about what they said, a transformation of our society that would radically undermine modern industrial state culture and institutions and result in serious social disruptions, economic decline, runaway inflation, and even institutional collapse. You know, this was their prediction. So this report anticipates a lessening of trust in the authority and a reaction against regimented lifestyle, tightly controlled society. It also suggested ways of preventing this worst case scenario. And this is the reason why this is so important, Vinny, because this is the smoking gun, if you will, of documentation from a government agency, which at this time in 1973 was right in bed with the CIA, with the NSA, with the Department of Defense. In 1973, George Herbert Walker Bush was, in fact, on his rise to becoming the director of the CIA. And this was the last days of the official MK Ultra program when they said that they ended it, you know, in the mid 70s. But we can all speculate. Is I believe they just stepped it up to nationwide. But basically, so this is the documentation of a government government agency that was saying, okay, here's what you can do. Some suggested ways of preventing this would be scenario, preventing the worst case of scenario, identifying existing institutions and traditions that could be used to control and contain the impetus of the new movement, this new thought revolution, this new thought movement. And one of the best solutions recommended, wait for it, were the traditions of Freemasonry, were the iconography of ancient Egypt. And a quote from the report, of special interest to Western world is the Freemasonic tradition. It played such a role in the birth of the United States of America that this has a potentiality of reactivating the American symbols and reinterpreting the work ethic supporting the basic concepts of a free enterprise democratic society and providing new meaning for the technological industrial thrust. And as we've said, this timing of this report is so remarkable. And one last little point of it that they make from the report is that it is under these symbols, Masonic and Egyptian, and principles and goals properly understood, and no others, it's stressed, no others, that the differing viewpoints within the nation of the United States can ultimately be reconciled. And that's just one little section of what, like a 300, almost a 300-page report, right, James?
Yeah. I mean, for me, seeing stuff like that, and then, of course, Vinny and I just each had Dr. Colin Ross out of Dallas as a guest on our shows, and what he brings to the table and then something like this, a document, you know, it's validating for me because I've been saying the entire time, just quoting Fred Kleinecht, you know, in 85 when he wrote Your Amazing Mystic Powers for the Supreme Council of the Scottish Rite, brazenly admitting that yeah, they fund that. And then, you know, Dr. Ross is a guy coming from the angle of a doctor who's saying, yes, he's done his homework on the subject, and the Scottish Rite comes up again and again with funding. And so, yeah, it's validating to read something like that. It's not shocking at all to me, but that's me.
So how does it feel to actually know that you're part of these organizations, or were part of it in James' case?
Absolutely, just disgustingly filthy, Vinny.
Well, let's talk about that though for a moment. Okay, so what we've pointed to is a government agency reporting, or a government agency actually paying for commissioning a report from a private corporation, an international corporation, which is basically saying that Masonic iconography and Masonic symbolism and Egyptian iconography are what we can use to kind of corral everybody's awareness back into the civic mythology fold.
How do they plan to do this? Do they plan to use it through imagery and advertising, media, etc.?
Well, I guess you can use the Dark Horse music video of Katy Perry's recently as a direct.
Well, we're on the tail end of it. Think of it, guys. We're on the other end of it. I mean, this was 1973 when this report came out. So obviously they were full on from that point to now. You just look at any movie, TVs, music. I mean, the Masonic symbolism and Egyptian iconography are everywhere. That's what Freeman has spent the last 10 years, you know, chronicling the Masonic symbolism hidden in everything.
I've spent probably the last year or so when I watch movies on my computer taking screenshots every time I see Masonic symbolism, and every single Hollywood film I see, there's at least two or three screenshots from it.
And here's your explanation. Here's why. Here it is.
So what's the mechanism? Specifically, how did they get – I mean, are they in bed with the producers of the film? Are we looking at specific filmmakers who are Masonic? Because I've seen a lot of Donald Sutherland films that are heavy on the Masonic symbolism, and he also mentions the number 33 in a number of films. There's his offices and things of that nature, and his apartments in the Puppet Masters and the Body Snatchers, and a number of other films all have black and white tile floorings. So
sure,
you come to the point where I'm starting to think, is there a strain, is there a flood, is there an inlet, a doorway or something of that nature which you step through where you kind of have the say-so about productions and ensure that at least this little thing is put in there? or is it simply bought and paid for marketing, much like product placement? So Coca-Cola would come in and would say, we'll give you $200,000 if your character drinks a Coke in this movie. Or the Supreme Council of the 33rd Degree comes into a Hollywood producer and says, we'll give you $1 million if you put a pyramid with an all-seeing eye in a picture on the wall, and another $1 million if you put a Masonic floor somewhere in the film.
Well, I mean, I don't know if I totally buy that that's exactly what's happening. But what I would more be willing to see, or more willing to imagine happening, would be multitudes of people from all different walks of life for all different various reasons being drawn to, you know, like, for example, myself, you know, what was the big deal? Why was I drawn to the Masonic Lodge? Why was I drawn to the symbolism? Do you know how many people in the last 3 years have contacted me personally by email or Skype or Facebook who say the same exact thing to me? I'm thinking about joining the lodge. I've spent my whole life being, you know, my adult life, you know, being preoccupied with this. What's, you know, what do you think? And it just continues to reinforce to me over and over again that quite possibly we've all been conditioned, like resonant frequency, you know, conditioning to just, because we're being saturated, our awareness is being saturated with the symbolism, we're drawn to it, we're open to it, and we feel like there's a affinity there. There's a relationship already with our awareness that we weren't aware of because it was being injected in us subliminally, you know? We weren't even paying attention when we were kids. I mean, how many hours did you spend, like me, Vinny, staring at the TV screen when you were growing up? I mean, all that image is just soaking up into your brain. And then, of course, later on in life, when you see a Masonic symbol on a temple or a lodge, or you hear reference to it in movies as a grown-up, it sparks something in you that's a memory now with an emotional attachment, but it was all planted there before.
Like play toy cigarettes or something like that, and a child goes on to become a smoker.
Exactly. The same psychological marketing going on. Exactly the same. And that is really the key thing here, is that so that's why I wanted to make the distinction. I wouldn't say the Supreme Council was paying
I'm not talking about literally. I'm talking
but I wanted to be clear that I think that you're onto something, but I don't think it's specifically that. I think it would be more along the lines that they'd be willing to be quote unquote creative consultants, right, James? They'd be like behind the scene creative consultant associate producers, you know?
Yeah, I think it's the same thing in politics, is it's always these dark consultants lurking in the shadows that you have to take more notice of and what they're up to, yeah.
With their dark consulted mysticism.
The dark consulted mystics, you know? And they're basically the ones who are considered the experts in the room. So any question of any call that has to be made, either black or white, left or right, they turn to the consultant and say, what do you think? And there's his moment. His agenda, if he's already on track, you know, he's on track, he's just going to keep consistently pushing for this, what is a consistent message.
Maybe, you know, maybe the three of us should cash in on this, and we can start our own company and say that we're a marketing consulting firm, very elite, you know, and snotty and all that, and we can sell Hollywood Masonic symbolism music video or whatever ideas.
I don't know, man. I think they're all tapped out. They're working from a different angle nowadays. You
with
know?
Your accent, James, you can make it work.
No, your accent, Vinny.
You know, it's true. The Hollywood people do love New Zealanders. I think it's because they saw the Lord of the Rings one too many times.
Well, and Fly to the Conchords, yeah.
The thing is, guys, they got a captive audience because everybody hungers for knowledge. Everybody wants to know answers. We're all
sitting
here.
If you say so, not everybody, mate.
Well, no, it's on some level, man. Come on, everybody hungers for some sort of answer. What, you know, why questions? Even the most basic person has a, you know, why am I not getting paid enough or something? Maybe I don't.
I'm
know.
Still
maybe
not convinced, bro.
Okay, you can make a good point, actually. I stand corrected, but
and it's not because they've decided not to be questioning on their own, it's they've had that questioning nature beaten out of them sufficiently by somebody. Not all of us have had it completely beaten out of us yet.
That's true. Or conditioned, you know.
At a young age.
Right, coercive methods. But inevitably, I think enough people are still wanting to know the answers. Those people that remain steadfast to quest even after
Even after the babies come along and interrupt the show.
Yeah, right. No, even after they've had the conditioning put on them, some of us persist in questioning. Some of us persist in saying it's not enough to be spoon-fed this white bread version. Whoa.
Mm.
Now, that's a new experience.
Now, it seems to me that there's something different about us, and I don't know if it's true, but we've been looking at James's bloodlines and stuff like that back in the day, and I wonder if I've got bloodlines that trace back that are of resistance or kingship or something like that, or if Alex Jones does, or any other kind of like great kind of, you know, a foot in the front door resistor of our times.
Well, isn't that a pretty good chance, Vinny? Isn't that a pretty good chance, considering you live in New Zealand and most of the people are descended from some sort of, you know, that the people who were brought there because they were not fitting in real well back in England, right?
No, that's Australia.
No, isn't it New Zealand as well?
No, New Zealand was mostly kind of people who weren't doing quite well financially, who would kind of, you know, need to get a loaf of bread in the street or whatever. You could either live in the crowded cities in the coal smoke and the filthy streets covered in horse dung, or you can help us populate this new colony that we've got. Here's a ship. It's 9 months at sea, and you'll have a bit of land when you get there. Who wouldn't take that opportunity? The people who had already broken laws and were the outcasts of society, on the other hand, got sent to Australia rather than New Zealand.
And America before that.
Well, I think more like America was discovered a wee bit before that, you know, because New Zealand has only really been settled for a couple of hundred years, whereas the United States is like 400. What happened was, when we're talking about immigration into a particular place, origin stories are actually quite important. I was just thinking about this before coming on the show today, about ancestry and knowing where you come from, knowing your roots, and how much power that actually gives you, just having that wee amount of knowledge. It's not a greatly exaggerated field of study, as far as I know, knowing where we all come from, is it? It's not in our faces every single day. It's something that they don't want us to know. And by they, you know what I'm talking about, just general scumbaggery.
Well, yeah, I mean, James, did you have something you wanted to say?
Oh, well, about that genealogy stuff. I mean, yeah, that's something that they definitely don't want everybody knowing. That's why I enjoy being rather in your face about it, the issue and all of that. I mean, I'd be willing to stake the farm that Vinny has it, and we know you do, frater, and a great deal of other people that are in broadcasting have it, and that's sort of a strange synchronicity. Like, your most successful people in Hollywood are all, you know, related to those bloodlines, so it's food for thought. But I don't know what else. I mean, you got to go and check it out, and sometimes that can be very grueling with, you know, getting your information together and all that type stuff and entered in and so forth. But in some cases, it's really easy because you only get back like three or four generations, and then, you know, boom, you hit that world tree and it takes off from there. So, I'd be willing to.
a little aside on genealogy. I mean, you know, they have the whole Mormon family search that everybody talks about on the internet.
Oh, they're real into it. Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, a few years ago, I first became aware of them probably at this point now, it was 10 years ago almost. And it was when I was really trying to find, I first come to realize that I had some heritage to look up, you know. And of course, it goes back to the whole social engineering program of like not wanting people to have tradition through family heritage, because it's important that they just feel like family doesn't matter. So you'll go off to the salt mine or, you know, factory and work, and then go off to the war and do what you're supposed to and lay your life down for the state. But that's par for the course. But the whole thing with Mormon Family Search, I discovered the, do you know why the Mormons have been gathering all those people's names and everybody's family's history for so long, Vinny?
No idea.
It turns out that back in 1840 something, the Mormons started a practice of basically after you died, they'd go through the records of people who had already died and they'd take their names and they'd stand in, they'd have live members of the church stand in their place and baptize these people into the Latter-day Saint Church after death.
So, oh yeah, that yeah the yeah I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, so that's what they do up to today. They
yeah, because Mitt Romney had it done to his
everybody's
or,
had it
or no, his wife had it done to her father or something like that.
Vinny, if you have any family members that are listed in the Mormon Family Search database, I've looked for my family and they're all listed there. My clan is there, right? It says at the bottom of the data, it's somewhere in the fine print. I have printed off documents. It says at the bottom of the page, it'll say born, died, you know, for the listing in the genealogy. And then it'll say baptized into LDS. And it'll be like a 20th century date. And the person died in like 19th century or 18th century.
I mean, talk about your
desperation. I'm sending you a hilarious link in the text box. You click this and have a good laugh.
No, but let's just think about the desperation of a church that needs to swell its numbers and ranks that much that they that they've run out of live people that they can convince. So.
Well, you know, that's probably – no, I think it's a quota or something. They have, like, to have a certain number of converts. Each person has to bring in a certain – so they were like, we got to get them from somewhere. We got to hit up the cemeteries.
Well, I guess they would like me because I just ran the little genealogy calculator or whatever, and their prophet, Joseph Smith, is my seventh cousin eight times removed.
Yeah.
So that's the curse of the Smiths. You're still causing trouble for the Mormons or the Masons, because we know that obviously Joseph Smith was not popular among the Masons.
Yeah, that's why they shot him.
Well, let's be more specific. Probably why they if they were the ones that shot him, probably why is because he basically ripped off the first 7 degrees of Freemasonry and made him Temple Mormonism degrees. The endowments of Mormonism are Masonic degree signs of recognition, handshakes, secret words, ritual, everything. It's all Temple Mormonism is basically a ripoff of the first 7 degrees of Freemasonry.
Except, of course, the magic underwear.
Well, that's just a – when you call –
that's
you consider
when it
that,
goes up a few more degrees.
That just makes them special. But it's basically the whole apron. It's just taking the apron to a different level or, you know, like combining it kind of with like the Essene linen, you know, the whole linen where they wore white linen, the scene supposedly.
Is it kind of like, is there like a backless version that your wife can wear?
Well, you better have a backless version too, you know, because I don't know what the plumbing facilities were like at that point. I don't know.
I'll take that as a yes.
That's room for canned laughter.
All right.
Because, of course, we didn't mention that the Dark Cult of Mystic Show is being recorded before a live studio audience today.
Yeah. Can we get the studio audience to like call out and give us a big round of applause just to like proof of life or something?
Yeah, right here. Hear it? Hear it? Wow, amazing.
I can barely hear it at all. It's like distance in the background, which is good because it doesn't actually mess with the audio that we're actually recording here. It's just some kind of like distant mosquito noise in the back, yeah.
No, we can't hear the applause through the bulletproof glass.
It's important that you remain there, too. You have that Pope. You're in the Pope vehicle for this interview.
I was just about to do the Pope vehicle line.
Oh, man. I bit the rhyme. Sorry, man.
No, it's great minds think alike time, isn't it? Now,
of course,
yes.
Going through the genealogy and all of that kind of stuff, I also am very interested to know like how people are actually raised and stuff and what happens to them, because I probably wasn't raised the best, you know. Daddy beat me and he ran off when I was 10. How many boys have that got that story, that kind of thing? I used to be a real violent kid. Then I stopped being violent. Now, what is it within our general society that is causing all of this? I mean, you see this kind of like the superstructure, if you will, of defathering, bad raising, no lineage, brainwashing throughout the entirety of your life, going from one institution to the other. Kids go into primary school, high school, then go off to university before they've even gotten their first job or had or even done any traveling or had any life experience outside of frickin' high school. And all of a sudden they're going from one institution to another. And after that, there's a postgraduate study. Or unless they're doing even higher education, which gets them into further even debt, which gives them knowledge that they can't even frickin' use in the real world, they go out and they get a real job for a minimum wage that doesn't even pay the tuition fees. Nothing works in this society for people who tell you what society should do for you. You know, have you ever noticed that? Work real hard for somebody else and you become real successful. It's like, no, it's not, bro. If you work real hard for somebody else, what they'll do is they'll take the prime years of your life and steal all of your good ideas during the most productive and creative years of your life in order to enrich themselves and further enslave your ass.
Yeah, well, you were talking about the marketing executive end of things in Hollywood and that imagery and everything else. But it's we should also note the mechanism of control that's in place, whether, you know, whatever dodgy direction that it comes from, it doesn't really matter because, like, last night, for example, is the perfect example of how it works. I was laying in bed and decided for some odd reason, I think I'll flip on Coast to Coast AM and see what they're talking about. And I turn it on and it's, you know, the topic is Illuminati this or demons that and whatever, the usual. And a caller calls in and starts going on a very poised and articulate, calm rant about the forces of the New World Order and this, that, the other, and Illuminati, blah, blah, blah. Well, so he's on for quite a while. It's like a couple of minutes that they're letting this guy go on because he's really good as a caller. I guess you know how that goes. And so what he's saying starts to evolve, and he finally goes and says the F word, Freemasonry, and George Norrie cuts him right off. I mean, not even thank you, goodbye, nothing, just hang up. Next caller.
Oh, and we'll talk about this after the break when I cut you guys off. We'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen, at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com. We're talking about Freemasonry on the Dark Occult of Mysticism special of the Vinnie Eastwood Show. My co-host for today is Fader X, and our very special guest is James Wright, formerly of the Supreme Council. Now, you were just talking about George Norrie hanging up on a call right after he mentions the word Freemasonry. Now, I wonder how deep the infection goes. I mean, if we are talking about a cognitive infiltration of the power centers of society via the vehicle of Scottish Rite Freemasonry, how deep does it really go? I mean, how many mechanisms in society is there a Masonic influence?
Ooh.
Are there any that are free from it?
Well, that's that. The power lies in the power of their networking. So it's one of those things where you never know. Like when I was doing KFKA in Denver, I lucked out. I happened to be at a local CBS affiliate where there were no Masons in the joint running anything. So I was allowed to be on air there for about a month before the local lodge, which was only three doors down from the radio station, made a big stink and threatened this and threatened that. And it, you know, completely demonstrated every allegation that I make about them. We don't threaten as they threaten. And so you know, my time there ended. I guess the pressure was too much or someone got scared or whatever. But Yeah, it could be anywhere.
So it stands to reason that if they hear about it, they can do something about it, no matter where you are.
Well, yeah, they get really butthurt about it. And so, like, my book signing that I was supposed to have on Hollywood Boulevard that day back in April of last year, it was going off without a hitch, the planning of it, and it looked like we were ready to go. And 3 days beforehand, the lesbian couple that owns the bookstore where it was going to be held called me in, you know, coming to talk to us in person. So I did, and they confided to me in a very concerned, shaken manner that there had been literally 24 Masons into their store in pairs for the entire week, every day prior, and had, you know, given these veiled threats. So they interpreted that as, like, so if we hold this event, our store could be firebombed or something.
Okay, listen, can we come back to a couple of things that you guys have said that I wanted to address?
Yeah, yeah.
I really want to, you know, the point you just made, I don't want to take away from that, though, about the firebombing. That was intense, the whole threat. I remember when that – you told me about that before, but I just wanted to address – you keep asking the question, Vinny. You keep saying, well, first the question was, you know, why? Why? What's going on here? Why the breakdown in the family? Why this? What's the cycle? What's the plan? And I think that it's really easy to locate and isolate the plan. The MO here is the literal breakdown of the family structure, because it's that whole Prussian model of society again. The idea that we need to, you know, the family structure, the what is the real holy trinity if not the father, the mother, and the offspring? That's the most holy trinity there is. There's nothing stronger than a bond, a balanced relationship between a man and a woman. There's no stronger relationship in the universe. That nothing can break them. Nothing could stop their initiative. They can move forward. You know, they can accomplish anything if they put their minds to. And that's what scares those who would control our world. And so the first thing that they saw as a prescription, we need to conquer this culture. We need to set the sexual roles in an imbalance, you know, put one over the other, and then to break the family unit up, you know, to make mom and dad obsolete, which you do by compulsion schooling, putting the kids in school and convincing them that everything that they're learning is much more than their family and parents could teach them, and to think that their family or parents are useless or not even worth their attention. And then the breakdown of the family further by sending dad off first to the mines or the factory where he works away from the house and nobody gets to see him. Nobody knows what he does. Nobody knows, you know, it's an anonymous existence. He comes home exhausted and sits in front of the hearth or in the front of the TV and that's it. And then, or the story that Vinny mentions where the culture moves forward to a place where they find that it's even better if we break the family up even more, break up the marriage, because now we've got two tax brackets, two demographics to tax households. Dad's got to live somewhere else where he'll be taxed. Mom will be living here where she'll be taxed. You know, if she needs social services, we can get her on the social teat so she'll be dependent upon our culture. And then, you know, all the package that comes along with that. But along the way, what does it do? It creates individuals who are open to persuasion. And that's, you know, so that's it. And then you mentioned the question of the Scottish Rite. To what level are they involved, and to what degree do they dictate these policies? I don't, even though I've isolated the Scottish Rite as the main culprit in my thesis, The Secret War Inside Freemasonry, I wouldn't say that worldwide it is the Scottish Rite that is the main culprit. I would say the team that are the main culprits are Scottish Rite Freemasons as well. They just happen to also belong.
What if, you know, they've simply infiltrated all the other aspects of Freemasonry, Blue Lodge, York Rite, Shriners, Golden Dawn, the whole lot of them, the whole gamut of different occult orders? The Scottish Rite Masons come in, they become members, they work their way up, and they basically seize control of the organization, more or less turn them into the Scottish Rite.
Well, James can attest to this. I know he can. What they do is they just watch people and individuals. They watch what they're capable of. They judge by their actions. People will show their moral compass, and they'll be noticed. And those who feel that this person would be useful in this order because of where their moral compass is at, they're tapped and invited to join that order. And those orders, as we know, now we're, you know, the numbers we get, they grow all the time. It starts off, I hear there's a couple of hundred dependent orders. Then it's 500, then it's 600, then it's 800. Now it's 1,200, I heard in a new book. You know, I mean, it's just endless numbers of psi-dependent orders where the predicated membership requirement is that you belong to a Blue Lodge first.
Well, I kind of liken it to regardless of whichever order you're citing in a conversation, it's almost kind of like when you have Italian in you, say you're half Italian or a quarter Italian or a tenth Italian or whatever, you'll always be welcome in a room of Italians. Like how that works, you just with
sure.
social attitudes and all, that's how these orders are very much so. Like, even though on the surface, at the public view, they may not sit there and, like, you know, the Scottish Rite loves to say we hate the OTO, but they actually enjoy quite a close relationship behind closed doors. So
they have this kind of communicative thing. Like, is there a Scottish Rite equivalent to the Italian "How you do"?
Yeah, there would be the P2 Lodge, I guess. But they do have Scottish Rite in Italy, actually. I believe that's where that Leo Zagami character claims to have gone through.
I thought Leo Zagami was a kind of pastor.
I'm not sure what he is, and
or a
I'm
way
not
of
even
folding
tempted to speculate.
Out of paper.
Mm-hmm. Or a genuine alchemist who can turn lead into gold.
Holding him up into working tools, the papers.
As long as he's got papers, he's all right with me, bro.
Hey, I hear you, man. He's a friend indeed.
Indeed.
No, but seriously, folks. Ba-dum-bum. No, really, though. I mean, the fact of the matter is that it is like that. You are a kind of... There is a certain nod, a gesture. That's why, you know, people wear pins and they have stickers on their cars and badges on their cars and stuff, because they know if a cop is a Mason, you got a better chance. I've got stories, my own personal experience where I got out of a situation where I had a big smelly bag of weed in my pocket. I'll just admit it. And I was standing there and this cop was not a Mason in my hometown, small hometown. But all the other officers who outranked him were, and they all were below me in rank in the lodge. And I'm standing there, and he's got me. I got no license on me. I did have a license. I just didn't have a copy of it on me. And I'm standing in my own driveway in my car, but I got a bag of weed in my pocket, and he's calling me on. He's saying, "You got this in your pocket. I can smell it on you." And I'm like, "Well, I don't know what you're talking about." And so he calls it in, and the desk sergeant on the job, he heard my name, and I know that he just said, "Let him go." Man, I could see the cop inside the car freaking pissed. I mean, he was livid. He was so mad. He came out. He was shaking. The anger handed me back. Oh, no, he didn't even have anything. Oh, I had my proof of registration, I guess. So he handed me back the paper, and he was like, "If I ever catch you on the road without your license, you're going to jail." You know what I mean? And he walked away. But I knew that I totally got off because I was a member of the lodge.
Oh, yeah, I would have upwards of 50 some odd speeding tickets on my record, my driving record, if not for being a Mason. Instead, I have zero. So, yeah, they used to pull up on the side of me, like on the freeway, especially where I love to speed, and, you know, just motion for me to slow down. They'd roll down their window and go, "Now, brother, you should set a better example than that."
Yep, my father, same way in my hometown. He was in the Golden Circle. That's what they called it, like Knights of the Golden Circle. They called it the Golden Circle. Anybody in the Golden Circle in my little town, you could speed by a cop doing whatever speed, and they would just, like, wave their hands down, like, with the gesture of, "Slow down, slow down," but they wouldn't do anything.
So the control structure and the separation of classes is actually a very vivid reality if you're a high-ranking Mason.
Vinny, you just said the magic words. Let's talk about that for a moment, James. The story you broke on your show, as a matter of fact, the DuPont scumbag there, who got off on any kind of prison for basically raping his own children, little children, and because they said tiny children, infants, and they said in the paper that it was, you know, guys like him have a hard time in prison, Vinny. And it wouldn't really help him to go to prison. It'd be more, this is a female judge saying it would be more helpful for him to have, you know, counseling and sexual offender counseling than do a day in jail, Vinny.
For raping infants.
For raping his own infants. His wife was testifying against him.
Now, you do realize.
And you know why? Great grandson of DuPont.
Now, you do realize that the reason why those people are treated so terribly in prison is it's called punishment.
It's called justice.
Uh-huh.
Right? That's part of the deal. Sorry, pal. Should have thought of that before you went where you went.
Yeah. I mean, there's some things that are just completely inexcusable, which any moral fabric or fiber in an ordinary person would not cut.
It's just sick. And then there's the no greater example. It's just like when I was in college back in the 90s and O.J. Simpson got off and the crowd of people in the cafe cheered. And I'm standing there looking at everybody like, what are you cheering for? The realization that the justice is farce in America, that you can buy your way out of anything, even murder, even cold-blooded murder. You can buy your way out of it if you have enough money.
Well, and it's not just that. It's the surveillance aspect to it as well, which has been a continued learning curve for me doing this because, like the story that I was telling you about the bookstore in Hollywood, so there was more left to that story. So I leave. We have this conversation. They express their deep concerns, and I leave. I walk out. I'm parallel parked in front of a meter at the intersection of Hollywood Boulevard and Cahuenga, which is one of the busiest. You know, you're talking wall-to-wall people all day, all night, tourists, everything. It's just a phenomenally busy intersection. So spotting someone in that crowd is going to be enormously difficult. And I was only at that store for about 10 minutes to have the conversation that we had, and when I walked out and walked up to my car, someone had drawn a square and compass in the dirt on my back windshield. So, I mean, they were watching even then.
That's freaking creepy, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, you've got a million of them. Those are just, that's just one story. James could pull out a bunch of those kind of crazy stories.
See, and here's the other part, is the brothers that just sit back and go, no, it's not possible, you know. There's only one rule, you know, believe in a supreme being. And it's like, bro, you're saying that this ancient Masonic order and whatnot that's descended from freaking King Solomon's teachings and blah, 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 has an idea that there's a supreme being, but in thousands of years, they haven't figured out or even had any idea what that is, and that's what they're telling you, and you just got to believe there's something up there?
Well, I think Fratter will agree with me when I say that if there's good guys in the ranks of Freemasonry, which of course there are, who would like to do something about it or would like to see it change, then my suggestion with my knowledge of it is they need to each go to their grand lodges and the Scottish Rite Supreme Council as well, take in all of them, and they need to amend that pesky little item in quote-unquote Masonic law that you are not allowed – it's a Masonic offense to criticize Masonry privately, not just publicly but privately. And with that in place, that's kind of like a, well, here there goes any kind of checks and balances we could have ever had with the place. So that would be, I would think, a good starting point to try and cleanse the halls of – Freemasonry by allowing that kind of feedback and discourse through from its more kind-hearted, level-headed members.
That might come back to bite you when you get 50 speeding tickets in the mail.
Well, no. Because they never would write the ticket, you see. So it was always just a wave, brush off, you know.
Yeah. It's not like a Masonic wave with like a finger gesture or anything like that. It's just they've seen the decal on your car and just, yep.
Or the ring on your finger, yeah.
But, you know, it's all such a farce, guys. It's not even enough anymore for me to do, you know, like the. I mean, I guess in the way I had mercenary motives coming into the lodge to begin with because I really wanted to know what was going on. I just wanted to know. I wanted to, satiate my curiosity. I'd read on it so much. I'd obsessed about it so much and I knew I could never know for real until I was initiated and went through it. And so I did it with that intention. And then, of course, in the back of my mind, of course I was, you know, I have to be honest, I was not going to not take advantage of any kind of advantages I might gain. You know, I mean, I definitely was thinking in terms of, hey, if I could better my existence, better my family's, you know, condition and state. I mean, if the world goes in the direction of a police state, maybe I'm going to have a gang sign I can throw to get through a checkpoint here and there. You know what I mean? Whatever. Whatever I can use it for, I'll take it, you know, is what, out of fear and desperation, you know, feeling like the, you know, we really don't have a lot of support or the, you don't have that mafia family to back your moves. You know what I mean? You're on your own, thrust upon a continent of a lot of aggressive and adversarial entities all around you, the people involved. But I'm at the point now where I've almost utterly, completely lost any kind of faith in Freemasonry. I've told James earlier today that I've gone to my last lodge meeting. I'm sick to death of it. I can't even stomach it anymore because it is such a farce and it's such a waste of time and money and effort to be involved with something that could even, if it's even a fraction of what we suspect. And then on top of it, the BS, nothing of inherent worth or value. James knows what I'm talking about. In the majority of the activities involved in Freemasonry are wastes of time and money and effort.
Sounds like high school.
Yeah, I mean, in many ways it is. Would you not agree, James, that statement I just made?
Yes, or call it the book definition of insanity, doing the same thing over and over and over, expecting different results. That is a Masonic lodge meeting.
Yeah,
well, I mean, like literally, take us through it step by step. What's a lodge meeting like?
Okay, so you get in there, and you've got your usual cast of characters, the busybody know-it-all guys that are always already there, and they're, you know, the guys that'll sit on the sidelines and murmur and criticize, you know, those kind of people. And these days, it's those are the only guys there. They've driven everybody else out. I mean, there's nobody in the lodges I have gone into in the last year, the last 3 years. I mean, really the last 7 years on a steady decline to the last 3 years of it being merely enough people or not enough people to even open a meeting. You have to have a quorum, you know, the bare minimum members to open a lodge or a chapter or a council or anything. And so if you don't have enough people in the room, it's like you showed up for nothing. But if you do have enough people, you basically have people who they get in their roles. You can sense that it's just a rote repetition. Nobody's really interested. Most people are reading out of the book. They're not really even trying. There's a lot of joking and backslapping kind of stuff. If there's any kind of levity, that's all you got, is sort of like irreverent. You know, the kind of stuff that you could probably get right involved in, Vinny.
Well, but we were, like all the other young guys, you and I took it enormously seriously and certainly played by the rules. And
sure,
all of that military precision and robotic verbiage and everything else, that was fine with everybody. But it's when you go beyond that and you're having your hand slapped for trying to do anything out of context of their little white collar image they want going on with the public, and then you're bad. And like the way they'll sit there and demonize the OTO, but most high ranking Freemasons belong to it, and you will find them at OTO Oasis meetings. So,
well, wait a minute. Let's talk about the hand slapping thing so people can understand what you mean by that, because it's a context that you get a clear understanding if you understand what's expected of the members going into the lodge. When you show up for what's called a stated communication, a monthly business meeting that most lodges in America have, when you show up, you're expected to be ready to play a part in the ritual of some kind, if asked, or you've already been assigned a part. And there's two kinds of rituals. There's a ritual to just open and close a lodge, and there's also initiation degree rituals that are different than just opening and closing a lodge. You don't have to do a degree in initiation rituals if you're just opening and closing a lodge to do business. But if you have candidates or people that are progressing to another level, then that's a separate whole little function. People will switch parts. They'll go from like being an officer in the lodge for an opening to a different part for the degree where there's like more stuff to be said. Because ideally these people have memorized the parts, because that's what you're supposed to do, is be able to do it word perfect from memory. So, but most people don't. Nowadays, everybody just reads it out of the book because nobody has time to memorize it, and everybody gets away with it. Unless you're in a district where they're really sticklers. Some like Texas, you know, it's a stickler. And also in Massachusetts.
Well, did the lodges in your home state have the gradings? Would the district deputy grandmaster come in and grade and, you know, oh, points off, you got one word incorrect, points off, your movements sure. were not synchronized?
Yep. Yep, the official visit and inspections would happen, and they do that. And so that's the thing, Vinny. There's standards that are set. So here's the climate. You've got these busybody know-it-all guys who have memorized these rituals like little parrots. I mean, they can just chimp it out like little parrots. They just memorize it. And they think that they're good little masons because they know that ritual by heart, right? But you ask them anything about the ritual, like what does any of this mean, they have no answer for you. I'm talking 99% of the people have no real answer for you except the exoteric explanation that's in the material right in front of you, which is just a general overview. It doesn't give you anything to do with like symbolic instruction or real interpretation of what's being done and what you don't get any idea. If you go into a Freemasonic lodge, there is no instruction pointing out how much of the lodge is really a ceremonial magical ritual. It's going on all around you, but they don't tell you that. You don't know that. If you're a newcomer and you go into a lodge, they do not say this part of the magical ritual is this, or this identifies with this, or this resembles that, or no. It's not like that at all. It's matter-of-factly a Freemasonic ritual. It's all about a moral code. You know, you're basically getting a moral teaching and allegories and stuff like that. But yet, you know, if that's all Freemason really had to offer was more moral teachings for grown-up men who are probably were taught right and wrong growing up in home, church, and school. So if that's not really much more. It's like redundant. You know, there's got to be something more going on here, right? There is. But they're not telling you that overtly. It's up to you to decide if you want to figure that out. And if you don't want to figure it out or can't figure out how to ask, guess what? All the guys in the room who seem to be these smart guys, these older guys, the younger brothers like me who joined the lodge 7 years ago, we came in thinking that they were just, you know, they knew the answers, but they were holding back. They weren't going to tell us. We had to figure it out for ourselves. They'd lead us to the places that we could figure it out for ourselves. Baloney, man. In the end, they don't know anything either. They're pretending to know, and as long as you don't try to directly ask them questions, they won't have to lie. You know what I mean? Because they don't know. But they'd like you to think that they're just holding back and not telling you so you can figure it out for yourself. And, hey, guess what? Chances are, if you're one of those one percenters that might actually stumble onto the true understanding of things, you might get it figured out for yourself, right? And they could be like, see, I meant to do that.
Well, the old guys in the lodge sounds like their job is much the same as parents, you know?
Yeah, in many ways, you're stumbling along, just kind of making it up as you go along, right?
Yeah, pretty much, you know. I don't really know how your life's going to turn out, son. Okay, we'll be right back after the break, ladies and gentlemen. We're taking a break at 3:33 and 33 seconds local New Zealand time. We'll see you after the break.